This is Stinky, and you're listening to 3CR's 24 Hours of Female Voices on International Women's Day 2019.
Up next, we have an interview with Amanda George and Emma Russell, and they'll be talking about 30 years since the Fairly Ring Out protests. We're going to have a chat today with two incredible abolitionist women that will all reflect on the 30th anniversary of the demonstrations that occurred. So we have Amanda George and Emma Russell on the line. Amanda is a very long-time activist, academic, community lawyer, one of the founding members of FlatOut, a statewide service for women exiting prison, and also one of the original organisers of the Fairly Ring Out. And Emma Russell is a lecturer at La Trobe University whose research explores decarceral feminist and queer activist theories and prison abolition, and she has been working on collating audio from the Fairly Ring Out and creating a podcast and a research project. And both Amanda and Emma are members of the Abolitionist and Transformative Justice Centre. Before we start off and have a chat about the 30th anniversary of the Fairly Ring Out, we have some audio that from the original 3CR broadcasts.
I'm right outside the front of Fairly Women's Prison at the moment. Everyone's just marching around and they're all around the prison. They're banging on the walls with cans. They're banging on the big slide-up front door. It's really huge. There's a lot of, as you can hear, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of people having a great time. If you're anywhere in the area, just come down right now. This is just an amazing feeling here. But you can see the door of the prison shaking. We'd love to break it down today.
As a member of the Women in Imprisonment Group who have organised this, the fourth Ring Out Fairly. Women of Fairly, we expect 1,000 people here today. We have got tents. We have got people from the Prostitutes Collective, from Women Against Prison, Rank and File, the Council for the Single Mothers and Their Children, Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service. We have got food, we've got children's activity, and we are here today because your lives are important to us. Woo!
Emma and Amanda, that was such amazing audio. And Amanda, we can hear you in that audio. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, it was really incredible. The that last piece was trying to address the women over the wall. So we had massive PAs. We had a fantastic truck that 3CR's Jan Bartlett provided as a stage. Massive sound system, heaps of bands. And, I think the last Ring Out, there were more than 1,000 people there. One of the great things in the first audio was saying that we could see that the gate was moving. Well, in fact, in one of the Ring Outs, the gate was actually knocked off its hinges. And I guess one reflection of how different times are is that we didn't get in trouble. There were, you know, police were there, but they could see that this was an event that was actually being really well managed, even though it sort of, you know, we didn't really intend to get the prison gate off, but it came off. And there was an acknowledgement that there needed to be a great deal of respect around the issues that we were there protesting about.
Mm. And Emma, it would be great to, because at the moment you're currently putting together a podcast of this audio and also working on a research project about it. So do you want to give us a bit of a historical overview of the Ring Outs?
As you mentioned before, Katya, the first one was 30 years ago on the 26th of June in 1988, and it was organised by the Coalition Against Women's Imprisonment, of which Amanda was a key component. And then it was repeated again in 1990 and in 1993. And then the last one was in 1996. And it was actually 2,500 people at the last one, is what's recorded, which is absolutely incredible to imagine that many people at a women's prison protest. And the last one occurred because Fairly Women's Prison was closed in 1996. to make way for a new private prison for women that was constructed out in Deer Park, which is still the prison that, that women are incarcerated in today out in the western suburbs. It's not privatised anymore. It only lasted 4 years as a private prison because it was so horrifically and chaotically mismanaged and lethally dangerous. But what we have seen in the 22 years since Fairlie Women's Prison was closed out in Fairfield is that the number of women imprisoned has quadrupled. Mm. So, you know, we've got a pretty alarming historical trajectory, but, you know, these protests were a very powerful flashpoint of a broader movement against and around women's imprisonment issues that, you know, has persisted and persevered over decades.
And we're going to we'll play a little clip about the demands of the Fairlie Ring Out. But Amanda, before we go to the demands, because a lot of those demands are still the things that we're demanding today about for our justice system and for women in prison. But it would be great to know a little bit about why the Fairlie Ring Out was organised back in 1988.
There was a few things going on. Nationally, there was a Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths and Islander Deaths in Custody, so that was a real focus. And there was also an parliamentary inquiry in the Victorian Parliament looking at what's called community violence. And so we decided that I was at Fitzroy Legal Service at the time, and a group of us decided that we should put in a submission around community violence, which is women's incarceration. And what we looked at was all of the factors that lead to and are involved in women's imprisonment, which is a history of family violence, childhood sexual assault, self-medication, lack of access to education, lack of meaningful jobs, no decent detox rehab facilities in the community, nowhere where women who are wanting to detox or rehab could have their children living with them. So it rather than focusing on the fact that women were committing particular offences, we were wanting to educate the community about really these things don't happen in a vacuum, and all of us need to be in our various sectors involved in trying to change things to reduce women's incarceration. Housing, of course, was a massive issue then, massive issue now. And we thought that if we had a broad coalition of organisations involved, those particular organisations would educate themselves around the issues as well, so that the housing sector would become educated around the importance of housing for women pre and post release. Very big issues around needle exchanges at the time. So we, you know, the group of people who were involved directly in women's prison stuff was tiny, but because the issues are very broad, we got a really big coalition of groups. We decided on a lightning campaign of about 6 weeks, and we produced a report that was tabled in Parliament, but every week we let out a new set of demands, and we had a new organisation doing media around the links, for example, between poverty, Centrelink, and women's incarceration, because at that time also there were a great number of women going inside for social security fraud. So this sort of lightning campaign, which was really well covered in all media in the lead-up, led to 1,000 people on that first ring out being there. And I guess one of the really significant things at that time was that women in prison were able to make telephone calls out. And so 3CR and a number of shows did some great interviews with women inside. So they were actively engaged in what the demands were and what it was, what the message was going out into the community.
That's amazing, because people in prison today, for those that don't know, it's actually incredibly hard to communicate with people inside, and people inside generally only have, say, 10 people on their phone lists that they're allowed to call, and those are monitored by the prison. So it's amazing that at that time you could have such contact with the women inside. It might be a good time to play the demands, actually. So we've got a little audio clip for that.
Co-author of the report, Amanda George, outlined some of the recommendations.
We are asking that there be a doctor at Fairley in residence 24 hours a day.
Because they know you.
We're asking that when prisoners are visited by their children, that this not be their one visit for the week. The right to see their parents is a children's right. It is not something that the Office of Corrections should take away from children. The Office of Corrections has got nothing to do with children. We are also asking that free childcare be made available at community-based correction centres. We are demanding that the possession of drugs of dependence for personal use be decriminalised. We are demanding that prostitution be decriminalised. And we are demanding that the humiliating and degrading process of strip searches of prisoners after every visit, whether or not there is any suspicion of things being passed, we demand that these strip searches be stopped right now.
Oh, that audio just gave me goosebumps. It was amazing. Those demands, Emma and Amanda, whoever feels free to comment, those demands are still going on today. So, I mean, it was the 1980s and you were calling for things like decriminalisation of drugs and decriminalisation of sex work and calling for an end to strip searching, which is unfortunately still going on today. It was pretty radical stuff. But those issues are still affecting us today.
The strip search campaign goes on, actually. We've just flat out just re-released a postcard. So we're asking people to write to the Minister for Corrections to demand the end of strip searching. Like, other countries are stopping them because they're completely ineffective and they're just extraordinarily abusive and re-traumatising. The issue around, the issues are essentially the same. However, visits by children at least are not removed automatically when women are facing or involved in, you know, so-called offences inside. But really, things really have got worse. That has to be said because of the massive incarceration of Aboriginal women inside and the phenomenal numbers of women going to prison. And the current state government, the mandatory sentencing laws that they are pushing through with no concern for, and this is a really pragmatic issue, with no concern about how much money that is going to remove from government's ability to pay for education, health, housing and childcare, let alone the women's and men's lives it's destroying by giving them mandatory sentences with you know, no hope of getting out. It's it's just appalling.
Emma, you've been bringing together a lot of this audio, and I guess also your research focuses a lot about what's going on inside our prisons and the prison industrial complex. And so with you're looking at your research and the work that you're doing on this podcast, how has kind of media and 3CR in particular played into this and some of your observations about, I guess, how these issues have been presented a lot over the years and how they're still going on and you're still identifying them in your research today?
Yeah, I mean, like Amanda's saying, it's sad that so many of these, and infuriating that so many of these issues persist. But also I think it's kind of a testament as well to how, I guess, far-reaching and thorough and radical some of these demands of this movement was, you know, 30 years ago, and, you know, what they were calling for, unfortunately still relevant today, but, you know, also powerfully still relevant today. And that's kind of part of the significance of, I guess, why Bree Carlton and I have been doing this historical work, is to try and learn from this movement to move forward in the present and the future. And I think it's interesting, over the course of the protest, you can see the demands kind of morph and change a little bit. So, for example, by the last ring-out protest, the first demand that the protest opens with is that no women should be in prison. So it's a really explicitly abolitionist position by the mid-90s. Well, it always was abolitionist, but it's sort of unapologetically so by then. And Amanda can probably talk a bit more about the role of 3CR, but, I was fortunate enough to find that Women on the Line actually, you know, they did these broadcasts of the ring-out in the 80s and 90s, and fortunately they archived them on cassette, so I was able to digitise the cassette at 3CR with the help of the wonderful Juliet Fox. It's incredibly powerful, I think, being able to capture some of these original sounds. I think it makes it so much more moving in the present and really connects people in nowadays to, you know, what happened back then. And it seems like sound in particular was a really important component of the protest, you know, from the band, the live bands that were there, and the chanting and the noise and the banging on the prison and the 3CR broadcasts across and through the wall really elevated the protests and made them all that more powerful.
Mm. And because as community activists, we're often calling for things, and it can seem like a long time in between successes. We're going to play a little audio clip of some of the successes of the campaign.
The 3CR provided a link with women inside Fairleigh Women's Prison by encouraging the women to listen to the 3CR coverage and to ring the station to express their feelings about their imprisonment and conditions inside the jail. Susan Duffy spoke to several women prisoners.
Look, Fairleigh's just a show place, you know what I mean? The buildings are all just show. What goes on is what we're concerned about. We're not interested in these posh buildings and all the bullshit they give to the public. We've got to live in them, we know what it's all about. I'm talking on behalf of all the girls at Fairleigh, and we all want to thank them with all their hearts. And while they're out there for us, we're in here for them.
The link-up's just been made, you can hear everybody clapping. It's just been done. We managed to get right round the prison.
Right, it's a big prison, you got right around.
Yep, I can't hear you, Susan, there's too much noise here. But just a fantastic feeling. All the women wove around the prison and they just linked up arms. So the whole day has been a total success.
Over 800 women linked arms around Fairleigh Women's Prison. During the action, two ex-prisoners visited the women inside and brought out a petition signed by 56 inmates, which backed up the recommendations made by the report Women and Imprisonment in Victoria.
Amanda, you mentioned before that you were really able to get quite close access to the women inside, and one of the real issues today for people that are imprisoned is how separated they are from the community and how hard it is to get access to them, and how often around prisons there's a huge amount of security and areas where the public can't go. So what was it like, or how did the women inside actually partake in the protest and in the demands themselves?
Yeah, it's amazing hearing that that audio, actually, because when you go to a prison now, you can't even get near the door because they excise all this land around the prison as prison property. So even going, you know, often within 50 to 100 metres of a prison now, they can tell you to get off. So, you know, in some ways, what was going on was that we had a very strong relationship with women inside, going in and out all the time, as did lots of community organisations. So a lot more people had access to the prison in those days. And we let management know that it was going on. So we told them what was going to be happening, sort of. And, you know, we said to them, we do not want you to stop women having visits on the day. We will make sure that the front gate is accessible so that women can get through and have their visits. Because we didn't want women to get punished for the fact that we were having a party outside. You know, even though it was a party about, it was a political party. So I think the fact that there was an acknowledgement by the prison that these things are important. This is the community getting involved. It's a very different, you know, it's very militarised now. The whole prison industrial complex has completely militarised things and has made prisons completely hysterical about anyone knowing what's going on inside the prison. Women inside the prison, a couple of them actually got on the roof to see if they could see. And nothing really happened. Women inside weren't locked in. They were, you know, we could hear them inside. They could hear us outside. At one of the protests, they actually threw a sheet over the fence with signatures and a message on it. And, you know, like we heard, women could access the telephones and ring 3CR and go on talk back while it was all happening. And in the lead-up, a number of us had fairly good conversations with women inside about what we were going to be doing. And we were really concerned not to sort of jeopardise, you know, what life was like for them in there.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, I mean, now that kind of going on, so people getting up on the roof, throwing sheets over the fence, I mean, that now would be deemed a prison riot, essentially, and there would be strict lockdown procedures that would be put in place for people taking that kind of activity.
There'd be gas, there'd be spray, there'd be, you know, men running around with these blooming Star Wars helmets on, you know, giving you grief. Like, it truly was an extraordinary moment. And, you know, the people who were running the prison were sensible. They weren't terrified. Mm-hmm. They weren't, you know, the whole risk management thing means that you can't let anything happen now because, you know, someone's going to get in strife for something. So there was a great deal of courage, I have to say, by the prison administration around allowing these things to go on.
Mm-hmm.
There'd been, you know, bans going into the prison, like Nice Girls Don't Spit went in, and I think a week after one of the ring-outs, they went in and did some music inside, and, it, you know, it, prisons were more... there's no way they were not... They weren't transparent, but there was much more movement in and out.
Mm-hmm.
We had people who worked at the prison who were helping us, you know, in that they were giving us information useful to our demands, because they were interested in women's lives too.
Mm-hmm. Emma, you're actually working on compiling a podcast of the Fairly Ring Out at the moment.
Yes, it's done.
Oh, it's done?
Yes. Just in time. Yes, so it's a 55-minute podcast that's about the history of the Ring Out Fairly demonstrations and goes a bit into the background of Women Against Prison, which was a core collective that was central in organising the Ring Out that Amanda was a co-founder of. And, yeah, it's available for free on soundcloud.com, and it's just soundcloud.com/ringoutfairly, and that's ring with a W. And Fairly is F-A-I-R-L-E-A.
Great. And you've also been working on a research project with Bree Carlton, is that right?
Yes. Bree and I are just finishing off a book about the history of this of this broader anti-carceral feminist movement based in Melbourne. The history focuses on the 80s and 90s. And, yeah, the book should be out either at the end of this year or early next year. And it's called Resisting Carceral Violence, Women's Imprisonment and the Politics of Abolition.
Prisons are basically dangerous places for people in them and for the community, because prisons do not do anything other than punish people. If we want to change people's lives who are in prison, we need to dump a whole lot of money into services in the community, into, you know, decent wages for people, into housing and support services for women who have been victims of violence their whole life. That is what will create a safe community. Money in the community is positive money.
Amanda, you mentioned that the band Nice Girls Don't Spit went in and performed for the women in Fairlie. So who were Nice Girls Don't Spit?
Nice Girls Don't Spit were a group of wonderful women. Billy Clark was singing up front. A bit of a brain snap about who else was in it, but they were all top women who did sort of a bit of country, sort of, I guess, country western, dirty blues. So Nice Girls went in, and I just want to sort of track back for 1 second, going back to Helen Barnicle singing, because Helen was from a group called Somebody's Daughter Theatre. And Somebody's Daughter Theatre were a theatre group who were inside, and when women started to get out, they started to do outside shows. Now, it's really important to acknowledge that Somebody's Daughter Theatre were integral in convincing the community that it was not a great idea of the government to send women out to Jika Jika until the new private prison was built. Because when they were going to be closing Fairlie, they were closing Fairlie to open a private women's prison. But in the hiatus, they were going to send women and their kids out to Jika Jika, which was a super maximum security prison at Fairlie, at Pentridge, where five men had died in a protest about its conditions. Now, Somebody's Daughter Theatre came out. A lot of those women who were in Somebody's Daughter had been in Jika when it was Jika, because for a time in the 80s, women were actually in Pentridge Prison and would be sent to Jika for punishment. There were a lot of women who actually died when they were incarcerated at Pentridge in that period of time. And that was why we had that demand, no women should be in men's prisons, because women die when they're in men's prisons. The idea to send them to Jika was just madness is not the right word to say. It was just criminal. And Somebody's Daughter really got on board, and women were able to tell the tale of how appalling it is for women to be in men's prisons, and tell the tale of how appalling it is for women being in prison anyway. So I just want to acknowledge that, I guess. And there was Nice Girls Don't Spit, Rapunzel Gets Down, Titters played, Archie and Ruby played. You know, music and culture have always been central to protest movements, and they were totally central to the Ring Out Fairlies as well.
And just on what you said before about women being inside Jika Jika, and for Pentridge was a horrible place where a lot of people died, a lot of Aboriginal people died and were actually buried there. And also I think it's important to reflect on young people and the risks of young people being put into men's maximum security prisons as well. And as you would know, there were 30 young men in a maximum security unit, Gravilia, of Barwon Prison about 2 years ago now. So there's always this risk of women and children being moved into highly punitive, dangerous spaces. So I guess that's still a demand that we have today, 30 years on as well.
That's right.
That was Amanda George and Emma Russell talking about 30 years since the Fairlie Ring Out protests.